Out front next, we've got breaking news. Trump denied and time is running out. A judge killing his last-ditch effort to delay the hush money trial. And we have just obtained the jury questionnaire for Trump's criminal trial that begins in 6 days. We're going to go through that with you right now. Plus, a sight to behold. Nearly every single American could see at least part of the eclipse sweeping across America if you had the glasses. 32 million people, though, were in the path of totality, a stunning thing. One of them, a former NASA astronaut, tells me it's like nothing he's ever seen before. And Marjorie Taylor Greene linking the eclipse to the New York earthquake as, quote, signs to repent in America. This is her efforts to oust the House Speaker are making her even more powerful in the GOP. Let's go out front. And good evening, I'm Erin Burnett. And out front tonight, we begin with breaking news. Trump's last-ditch effort to delay denied. A judge just rejecting the former president's request to delay his hush money trial, which starts in 6 days. Trump is trying to move the case out of Manhattan. And it comes just as CNN has obtained the crucial jury questionnaire that potential jurors will have to answer in Trump's first criminal trial. Our Paula Reid obtained them, and they offer a lot of important clues about the trial we're about to witness. You've got questions ranging on, you know, whether jurors have supported any fringe groups like QAnon, to where they get their news, to whether they've ever listened to certain podcasts, to whether they're married, all sorts of details, you know, and also questions like this. Do you have any feelings of opinions about how Mr. Trump is being treated in this case? So it is 42 questions in all. We're going to go through it as Trump is throwing every piece of spaghetti he can find at the wall in a final effort to avoid his facing judge and jury in that first criminal trial in just 6 days. He's also frenetically trying every last-ditch effort to get his Georgia election interference case tossed. Tonight, turning to the Georgia Court of Appeals, his team writing that the former president's, quote, indictment wrongfully criminalizes core political speech and expressive conduct protected by the First Amendment. Remember, this is the case where Trump appealed to the Secretary of State of Georgia to find him votes that did not exist. Listen.
All I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have.
Now, these two cases are not theoretical possibilities anymore in New York or Georgia. They're real and they're happening. And in the case of Georgia, the prosecutor promising the, quote, train is coming and that she wants a trial. And this is very crucial in this one because it's different than the New York one. It will be televised. And so the whole country can see it coming into the final days of the election. She wants it to start in August. So let's get straight to Paula Reid on the breaking news tonight. And Paula, you've gotten these jury instructions and the criminal trial in New York that they refer to is starting in just 6 days, even though he is trying one more Hail Mary after another here to try to delay it.
Yeah, trying unsuccessfully today. That New York appeals court judge rejecting this last minute effort to pause the trial. While Trump continues to try to argue that this should be moved out of Manhattan, the Trump lawyers argue that pre-trial publicity is making it impossible to get a fair trial. But prosecutors, Aaron, they said, look, it's too late to do something like that. And the way we will weed out biased jurors is through jury selection. And that's where the jury questionnaire comes in. And you look through this, the questions, some of them are similar to the questions we saw during jury selection in the E. Jean Carroll case. They ask where jurors get their news. They ask if they or anyone close to them has ever worked for Trump or attended a Trump rally. They also ask about membership in extremist groups like the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. Now, again, these are questions that we have seen before. Then they get more specific about, in this case, about feelings, about Trump himself. This is the process, Aaron, that prosecutors insist will help them weed out anyone who has a bias. Now, a question I'm getting a lot is, how long is this going to take? Well, remember, in this case, it's only 4 days in a trial week because court is off on Wednesdays. We also have a couple religious holidays over the next few weeks. So this process of selecting a jury for this, the first criminal prosecution of former President Trump, could take a few weeks.
Could take a few weeks just for the jury to be selected. All right. Very significant. Paula, thank you very much. Paula breaking this news and obtaining this questionnaire as well. Out front now, Ben Ginsburg, the longtime Republican election lawyer, Harry Sandick, former assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, and Ted Herndon, national political reporter for the New York Times. So thanks very much to all of you. Harry, you've been going through this juror questionnaire. And as Paula points out, some of the questions in here are ones we saw before in the E. Jean Carroll case. You know, whether you've worked for Trump, for example, where you get your news. 42 questions, as she points out. What stands out to you?
Sure. I think it's a very thoughtful approach. Many of these questions are typical in any jury trial about the background of the juror and what they do, where they live, those types of things. But then they're aimed at trying to elicit people who can't be fair, because, of course, Trump is entitled to have a fair trial of jurors who don't go in with a preconceived notion about his guilt. And the judge has said that anyone who says, I can't be fair, they'll just simply be excused, which will make the process take a long time, but will result, one hopes, in a fair trial.
Right. And you hope, of course, that people give honest answers to all of these things. This is an odd moment in America. Ben, what stands out to you as you look through this? And interesting on the places where you get your news. I mean, sure, Newsmax is on there, MSNBC, you've got all the, but then, you know, X, TikTok, all of it is here, Ben.
Yeah, it is all there. And it's designed, obviously, to try and get at what people are believing. I do think it's noteworthy that the judge said in his cover letter that the two sides had not agreed on the jury instructions. So that anticipates something we probably all knew along, which is there are going to be appeals on this, that there will be a contestation over the jury selection process. And you're right, it is going to take an awfully long time.
As Paula said, weeks. All right, put a pin in the appeals and the time it takes for 1 second. Instead, just going through this, what stands out to you? It's interesting. They even go so far as to say, have you read certain books and listened to certain podcasts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it shows the painstaking process the legal process goes through to make sure you weed out folks of bias. But then my political head comes on and knows that Donald Trump, no matter what the process is very, very likely going to say that there's bias against him no matter what, as he's been doing this whole time. I mean, they've had pretty much the same set of goals since these indictments came down last year, to obscure the facts and also to delay this for long enough so that it starts blending in with him in the political calendar over the summer. The mere fact that we are talking about the hush money case and not the January 6th case is the trial that's going first was considered a victory for the Trump folks. They wanted this case to kind of go first. They think it's easier to, that the folks have actually ingested the facts here. But I think that as this comes on, we do see polling say that maybe people will change their opinion if a conviction comes or as the election gets a little closer. So while this case may not be the same in terms of severity substantively as the other ones, I don't think we should put it to the side and assume that it doesn't matter for voters.
All right. So, Harry, what's the timing we're looking at here? You presume, interestingly, they didn't agree on the jury instructions. I guess so, a few things. Is that normal? And how long do you think, if Trump appeals that, what does that do to this 6-day start? Does anything change that, including his last-ditch effort for a change of venue today?
Sure. I don't think anything is... let me put it this way. I don't think anything should change it. The fact that the parties didn't agree on the questions to put to the jury is very common. Typically, each side, the government and the defense, they make proposals and the judge picks some from one and some from the other to do what he thinks is fair. Now, you can always appeal anything, but typically the way it's done is not as you go. It's done after final judgment. So if Trump challenges these questions or challenges venue or anything else, it's not that he doesn't have a chance to challenge it. He will, on appeal, after a conviction. If he's not convicted, there doesn't
need to be an appeal. So to basically say that the conviction itself, if it happens, is biased.
That's right.
And therefore, should be thrown out.
That's right. Any legal error that he identifies, he'll be allowed to appeal at the end of the case.
All right. So, Ben, what do you think happens here? And does any of this, in your mind, add up to changing where this case goes, you know, in 6 days? And also, if you could weigh in on what's the timing here, if it's going to take us weeks to even get a jury selected before you get an initial verdict?
I think Paula was right about the time. It is going to take a matter of weeks, given everything in this case and the holidays. So it is going to be a prolonged period. As for the substance of this case, I think this is the weakest of the cases that have been brought against Trump. And there are going to be legal points in here in which Trump actually has a pretty good argument. But it's also true that this case is going to present a series of not so flattering facts about and instances that took place in this. And that does stand to very much tarnish his reputation, no matter what the outcome of the case is and right. How long the appeals.
Which is interesting, as said, because we are talking about things that have been very well litigated in the court of public opinion, right? Whether, you know, people care that, whether Trump slept with a porn star, people have opinions on that that were set prior to the first election.
Absolutely. I mean, actually, when I talk to people about this case, they feel like it's old news. I mean, as we talk to folks across the country, people bring up the fact that he hasn't been criminally indicted about January 6th and we're looking at the special prosecutor, even things like taking the documents cut through because of the Mar-a-Lago search. When we think about this case specifically, every time I've heard someone bring this up, it's kind of a confusion as to why this has been relitigated right now. I think that should be separate from the kind of legal questions we see here. But politically, Trump is going to try to use that to his advantage. When we ask about why these appeals are happening, some of it is because he wants to be able to make the political argument in a public arena about them. So they might fail and they might delay the trial. All of that is a possibility. But we know he's going to try to use it to weaponize it against the process itself.
And Harry, you're in terms of when you look at the Georgia attempts to delay on Fannie Willis, which have failed thus far, and in this case, do you anticipate both of those going ahead?
I do think that that trial will go ahead. The grounds that were argued for the appeal about this being free speech, that seems like a real long shot. You're not allowed to say anything that you want. That's not what the First Amendment protects. Yeah. And I thought the judge's decision about whether to disqualify the district attorney seemed like a balanced decision, saying that, you know, she couldn't have this one particular lawyer working on the case due to the appearance, but not disqualifying her entire office, which is a drastic step.
And Estelle, quick final word to you in terms of paying for all this. Trump's trying to raise money and have other people pay for it. But to the extent that he's had to pay for some things himself, even some of the judgments in the Manhattan real estate valuation case, his net worth has been affected. And you've done a deep dive on that. What have you found, especially in light of Truth Social, which is now like the lion's share of his net worth for a brief moment, even though it may be ephemeral, to say the least, right?
Exactly. Last week, we focused on Trump's finances for our podcast. And what came through is really this is a person doing an extreme juggling act. And so the money has dwindled he's using to pay for other people's funds. That pocket of money has gone away. So you might have to dip further into those personal funds to basically be able to pay for the legal expenses coming forward. You have the judgment, certainly. You have the legal trial, certainly. You also have a political campaign that is bleeding dry. The Biden campaign is raising so much more money than Donald Trump. And partially that is because his money is tied up in five different places right now. So much so that it's not just the brand that's being affected, but actually his ability to legally, his ability to actually do the things he wants to do politically and personally.
Yeah, which is a huge thing to actually say. Because in the past, he always had that ability.
He was always,
just didn't want to use his own money.
Absolutely.
Now, a very different story that you paint. All right. Ased, thank you. Harry, thank you. Ben, thank you. Great to see all of you. And next, a spectacular show from Texas to Maine, a rare solar eclipse turning day into night for millions. And now cars lined up for miles because guess what? It's time to go home. These are live pictures outside of Indianapolis, which was in the path of totality. Plus, Marjorie Taylor Greene live in Georgia at a town hall where she's tripling down on calling for Speaker Mike Johnson's head. How the fringe congresswoman is growing ever more powerful in the GOP tonight. Plus, a top staffer for RFK Jr. revealing what they say is the number one priority.
The only way for him, for Bobby to shake it up and to get rid of Biden is if he's on the ballot in every state.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Light wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, live pictures near Indianapolis. Heavy traffic. Wow. That looks absolutely miserable, but maybe they're all in such a great mood because they were there at the center of the path of totality from that rare solar eclipse today. They had that moment. 32 million people in the path today, all together as the moon crossed the Mexico-Texas border and across 15 states. Massive crowds gathering to take in the spectacular sight, looking up as a whopping 99% of Americans were able to catch at least a glimpse of partial eclipses. Bill Weir is out front.
Every day, the shadow of the moon bounces willy-nilly across the lifeless Milky Way. And when it hits Earth, it mostly darkens ocean or ice with no human witnesses.
The darkness has settled into Kerrville, Texas.
But on this day, random fate sent that shadow on a North American tour like no other. And from Mexico to the Maritimes, that shadow moved people to weep and cheer.
I'm gonna cry.
Mary.
I love you.
And propose.
Did you marry me?
Yes!
It moved animals, triggering both flamingos and penguins at the Dallas Zoo to bunch their flocks tighter for nighttime safety.
The penguins are all clustered together. The flamingos are all clustered together.
Yes, all the birds are joining together.
The swath of darkness over 100 miles wide moved clouds.
Oh, it's amazing.
And dropped temperatures by 10 degrees.
The chill in the air is getting cooler and cooler.
But for science lovers,
what did you think of
there
it
were
all?
Chills for other
we
reasons.
I thought it was incredible. You know, I've seen several solar eclipses. This, though, was the best I've ever seen. Because we saw the diamond ring effect, and then Bailey's Beads, you know, the sun coming through the mountains.
And with the sun less blinding than normal, this was also a rare chance for NASA to use high-flying planes and rockets to study the sun's corona and the massive eruptions of plasma happening as the sun cycles through its most active phase. Solar storms have the potential to destroy satellites and fry entire electrical grids. So scientists are hungry for clues that could help predict space weather.
So amazing, Bill. So when you look at some of the things they're trying to do and NASA has a moment like this to observe, what were they trying to learn?
Well, the power of this star that really gives us life. It lifts our moods, tans our skin, but it's also a thermonuclear bomb that's been going off for 4 billion years. And on an angry day, it emits enough electrical power, enough energy from those spasms in the plasma that could really fry the electrical grid here on Earth or really wreak havoc with our satellite systems that keep us connected through GPS and weather and finances. So they're studying that. They're studying the ionosphere, the charged particles that sort of crackle around the Earth as the sun comes up right now. And it's just that artificial shade that science enjoyed today lets them study stuff that normally you can't see because the sun is so bright. Also, amateur radio operators, ham radio operators, bouncing their signals off the ionosphere to see how it's altered by this. But what a day of just pure human connection. Whether you're an astrophysicist or a seventh grader, you could see faces light up. Most people saw it despite warnings of cloud cover. All in all, a nice nonpartisan uniting force of nature across America. And the next one, to give you perspective, Aaron, toddlers today will be old enough to drink for the next total eclipse in the United States 22 years from now.
Wow. That's just something sobering to think about. Pun intended. All right, Bill, thank you very much. And I want to go now to former NASA astronaut Mike Massimino, who has traveled to space twice, also the author of Moonshot, a NASA astronaut's guide to achieving the impossible. So, Mike, people traveled from all over the country to be in the path of totality. I mean, I know people who travel around the world constantly looking for these things, you know, that there's something spiritual about it, something that touches the soul. You made the journey from New York to Russellville, Arkansas. to go to one of the best viewing spots in the country. And you shared some of your images from today with us. Tell me, what did it mean to you?
Aaron, it was amazing. I have gotten to see some amazing things during my space flights, but I would say this is the most amazing event that I've witnessed here on the planet as far as our relationship with the cosmos and our being here on this planet and how we are part of this cosmic dance between the sun and the moon and the stars. This was quite an event, and it was the totality of it. I had seen other partial eclipses, but this was the first good weather total eclipse that I had been able to observe. And to see that diamond ring, that it looked like a halo in the sky, yeah, it was emotional. And to be there with some of my family members and with a very nice community made it even more special.
I'll never forget. I've only seen one total eclipse. I saw it today, but I was not in the exact mm-hmm. totality. I've only seen one in my life, stumbled upon it.
Yeah.
An unforgettable day in my life. But you, Mike, this is the thing. When you say the most incredible thing you've seen on Earth, you have seen some of the most amazing things yeah. a human can see. In fact, that so few humans have seen.
Yeah.
Space flights, you've shared images with us, but that's not the same as being there yeah. yourself, right? For spacewalks. You were compelled mm-hmm. to yeah. travel 1,300 miles for the eclipse
yeah.
from the Upper West Side in Manhattan, where you still would have had a pretty darn good view, just barely yeah. outside the path of totality.
Yeah.
So what made it worth yeah. it?
Well, I had heard that getting to totality is a big difference than even seeing like 99%.
Yeah.
And I had heard this from sources that I trust. And they're right. I mean, it really was different. It was, you know, the whole thing was kind of cool to see the moon creep in and, you know, the sun gets eaten away little by little like a Pac-Man. And yeah. then when it goes and you can remove your glasses again and it's dark and it's cool, and you're looking up at an astonishing sight. There's something about it that no photo can really do it justice. It's yeah. being in that moment and noticing that and realize this is something that only happens. As you said, it's not going to happen again here in the U.S. for 22 years, and you're witnessing it for a few minutes. It is worth the trip. It really is, and I am so glad I did.
So, you know, one of this thing, and I guess this and other events recently, you know, all in their own different ways, whether it be earthquake or crazy weather, have made us all realize how vulnerable mm-hmm. we are, right? How things happen outside yeah. of our control. And you know, especially in the context now, we worry so much about the environment and climate change. One of the things Bill mentioned in his report, right, there was a point mm-hmm. in some places where the temperature dropped as much as 10 degrees during the eclipse. So in just mm-hmm. a few quick moments. Now, we all feel that when a cloud goes yeah. over the sun. And yet somehow experiencing it in the context of what we saw today was quite different. I mean, it's an incredibly large and swift change in temperature.
It's a reminder of how dynamic and fragile things are, I think, because when it gets cloudy out, it's a lot different than when the sun is shining on us. But it's really the same reason during the eclipse. It's just that less solar radiation is reaching the surface and reaching us. So it's cooler. We feel a cooler temperature. With the moon blocking the sun, it perfectly blocks it. The moon, the sun is 400 times larger than our moon. And it's also, coincidentally, 400 times further away than our moon. So that when we get a total eclipse yeah. like we had today, it perfectly blocks it out. And so that we're seeing a total blockout for those minutes of that reduction in solar radiation. Yeah. And that's why we get that huge temperature drop. We see the effect of what the sun does to us and how fragile that can be when it's blocked.
Yeah, I mean, and what an amazing thing when you say 400 times larger, 400 times farther away. I yeah. mean, even in the context of the billions and trillions, whatever, you know, there's no word for the number of stars yeah. out there. Just to think of yeah. the odds of such a perfect ratio coming, yeah. Even in the context of our sadly average little sun that does give us everything. All right, thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
Aaron, you bet. All right. Thank you.
And next, Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene's war with her own party heating up tonight, threatening to oust the House Speaker and blow up the House if she does not get her way.
How dare he go on TV and say it's his top priority to fund Ukraine for $60 billion?
Plus, Trump taking a lot of heat tonight from conservatives after opting not to support a national ban on abortion. New tonight, Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene just wrapping up a town hall in Georgia where she ramped up her attacks on Speaker Mike Johnson as she pushes to oust him.
I will not tolerate a Speaker of the House that I voted for to sell us out. I will not tolerate it.
Comes as Green again is making headlines for her social media posts, the latest linking the eclipse to the New York earthquake and calling them all strong signs to, quote, repent. Sunlen Sarfati is out front.
This majority is a failure.
Brazen.
Why don't you f*** off?
Brash. And ever the provocateur.
No, I reclaim my time. You're a liar.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is holding the reins at the center of the effort to take down Speaker Mike Johnson, threatening to throw the Republican Party into chaos.
It's more of a warning and a pink slip.
Since filing the motion to vacate, Greene only intensifying her attacks.
Mike Johnson he's literally turned into Mitch McConnell's twin, and worse. He's a Democrat.
Slinging political arrows directly at the leader of her own party.
He is a damn fool, Steve.
He's a liar. Green set off by the spending package Johnson negotiated to avoid a partial government shutdown.
The current Speaker of the House we have right now is getting rolled in every single meeting. He is negotiating from weakness, and we have lost full confidence in him.
Johnson calling her move a distraction.
She's trying to send a message. I respect the message. I share her frustration about the process.
With some Republicans dismissing her as unserious.
Nobody cares what Marjorie Taylor Greene says or thinks. And she's a one-man show. She's grandstanding. She wants attention.
The Congresswoman has trafficked in some of the most debunked conspiracy theories, bringing the most questionable views and wild opinions to the U.S. Capitol.
Everybody regrets.
Green claiming this weekend that today's eclipse and Friday's earthquake in New York are a sign from God to repent and warning about things to come. Yes, eclipses are predictable and earthquakes happen, and we know when comets are passing by. However, God created all of these things and uses them to be signs for those of us who believe. Green is an election denier.
Today, I'll be objecting to a stolen election. We can't allow this to happen.
And before coming to Congress was a QAnon sympathizer, promoting conspiracy theories about the September 11th terror attacks.
The so-called plane that crashed into the Pentagon.
And mass shootings.
You guys are being used.
That's right.
You're being used by the left because you're young. And you're being tricked into having your Second Amendment slowly chipped away and taken away from you.
And anti-Semitic conspiracy theories.
So, what about Jewish space lasers? Tell us about Jewish space lasers.
No, why don't you go talk about Jewish space lasers?
Once claiming that the deadly wildfires in California in 2018 were caused by a laser from space, possibly controlled by the Rothschild Investment Bank. Conspiracy theories she was forced to apologize for after taking office in 2021.
These were words of the past, and these things do not represent me.
Now, the next big question is, will Marjorie Taylor Greene follow through with this threat to get rid of Speaker Johnson? Now that she has filed that motion to vacate, she now has to bring it to the floor. Now, after it's brought to the floor, she will officially have 2 legislative days to try to force a vote to oust him. But, Aaron, she has so far not revealed the timeline of how all this will unfold. Aaron?
All right, Sunlen, thank you very much. And let's go now to the former Republican Congressman Ken Buck, who was one of the 8 Republicans who had voted to oust then-Speaker Kevin McCarthy. So, Congressman, you heard Sunlen talk about some of the conspiracies Green has pushed over the years, and obviously now saying that, you know, if the Speaker doesn't do what she wants regarding Ukraine, she's going to go ahead with what she can now do, right? Just takes one to force a vote on the speakership. Does it worry you that she has this much power in the House of Representatives?
Well, Marjorie has this much power because we have such a small majority at this point in time. Mike Johnson, the Speaker, is on the right side of history, and Marjorie is on the wrong side of history. We know that Russia is propagating these false statements, narratives about what's going on in Ukraine. We know that she is getting her talking points from Russia. And we know that they're false. And Mike Johnson is doing the responsible thing by trying to make sure we get a vote on Ukraine funding, make sure that the Ukrainian people can fight for their freedom. The fact that Marjorie is is continuing down this false path. I don't think many Republicans are going to support her. There will be some. And I expect that the Democrats recognize this moment in history and the importance of being bipartisan in supporting Mike Johnson.
Well, we will see. I mean, that's a whole nother can of worms, I guess, as we could say. But Congressman, she has been going after Speaker Johnson over the Ukraine funding, obviously, specifically. But then she just recently suggested to Tucker Carlson something that, you know, sort of took me aback. She had no evidence to back it up. But she said that the whole reason that he may be doing this is because Johnson may be being blackmailed. Let me just play the exchange.
Mike Johnson has made a complete departure of who he is and what he stands for. And to the point where people are literally asking, is he blackmailed? What is wrong with him? Because right. He's completely disconnected with what we want.
Do you think he is being blackmailed?
I have no idea.
All right, so she's saying people are literally asking, is he being blackmailed? Then says she has no idea when Tucker asked her again. Do you take this seriously?
No, I think it's irresponsible, as so many of the statements that Marjorie has made over the years are completely irresponsible. The idea that somehow the speaker is corrupt because he believes that we should be supporting an ally that's been invaded by a war criminal, Vladimir Putin, and the idea that somehow anybody who is in agreement with Ukraine and our NATO allies is corrupt. It's just another distraction that she uses to take away from the core arguments that are so important.
So, you know, when you talk about her, it is a bit different, obviously, than what the man you voted to remove as Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, said about her. In fact, this weekend, he said this about Congresswoman Green.
And the one thing I've always found about Marjorie is she's a very serious legislator that deals with policy. And the best way to deal with anyone like that is sit down and talk to them.
You've worked with her more recently. Does what he say add up to you at all? And
well, I think Kevin is much more experienced talking to Marjorie about policy than I do, first of all. Secondly, my experience with Marjorie is people have talked to her about not filing articles of impeachment on President Biden before he was sworn into office, on not filing articles of impeachment that were groundless on other individuals in the Biden administration. And she was never moved by that. She was always focused on her social media account. And Moscow Marjorie is focused now on this Ukraine issue and getting her talking points from the Kremlin and making sure that she is popular and she is getting a lot of coverage.
All right. Well, Congressman, I appreciate your time and your blunt and honest words. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
And next, we've got breaking news. The special counsel Jack Smith has just filed a brief with the Supreme Court on Trump's immunity claim. So we are just getting that now. It's at the heart of the DOJ's election interference case. We're going to share it with you in just a moment as we're going through it. And the Vice President Kamala Harris shredding Trump after a major announcement that has him breaking with his own party.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking news, we have a new filing. This is just in from the special counsel, Jack Smith, and it is a filing to the Supreme Court urging them to reject Trump's claims of sweeping immunity in an effort to try to stop the former president from further delaying his January 6th trial. Paula Reed is out front in Washington, and Paula, 50-some-odd pages going through. You've had a chance to read more of it than I have, but point by point, his argument as to why Trump is not immune from prosecution because of things he committed or crimes that he allegedly committed while he was in office.
Exactly. Here, they are urging the Supreme Court to reject Trump's argument that he should be immune from prosecution for things he did in and around January 6th and efforts to subvert the election because he had presidential immunity. This is an argument that was rejected by the trial court. It was rejected by the Court of Appeals. Here the Supreme Court is taking it up. It will be the subject of a much anticipated Supreme Court argument next week. Now here, they make the arguments. They say the special counsel says, quote, the absence of any prosecutions of former presidents until this case does not reflect the understanding that presidents are immune from criminal liability. It instead underscores the unprecedented nature of petitioner's alleged conduct. They describe the charges against him, Aaron, as, quote, an unprecedented assault on the structure of our government. So here they are asking the court to reject this argument and to do it quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And as they go through, as you point out, you know, it's saying that Nixon's acceptance of a pardon was also making it clear that he felt that there needed to be a pardon because he was subject to prosecution for acts he committed during Watergate while he was in office. So going through and laying all of this out, ultimately, though, Paula, as you point out, the arguments are supposed to be next week. This is all about timing, right?
Yeah, and look, the special counsel has to be frustrated because, Aaron, months ago, he asked the Supreme Court to just step in and decide this issue. Don't wait for it to go through the appellate court and then take it up, because he knew that process could potentially make it impossible to bring this case before the November election. The Supreme Court declined to do that. They let it go forward with an appeal. Now, they are hearing this on an expedited basis, but we still don't expect an opinion right now until late June. And then even though Judge Tanya Chutkan, the judge overseeing this case, has said she would move pretty quickly, she would like to bring this as soon as possible, she still has to give both sides some time, perhaps a few months to prepare. So we're talking about late summer at the earliest. So timing is such a critical issue here. The Trump team has even floated the idea that maybe they could just toss it back down to the lower court for more proceedings. Again, Aaron, that wouldn't necessarily be a win for them, but it would be a win in terms of this goal of getting it pushed back until after the election. And I remind people the reason he wants it pushed back until after the election is because if Trump is reelected, he will make both of these cases go away.
All right, Paula, thank you very much. As Paula continues to go through that, she'll be back if she sees more for you to know about. This also comes tonight as Vice President Harris is slamming Trump. The former president teased a big announcement on abortion. But the takeaway was just to put it to the states. Harris is warning that Trump would go much farther to restrict abortion rights, though, if given the chance.
If he were to be put back in a position where he could sign off on a law, he would sign off on a national abortion ban. Let's be very clear about that.
Well, Trump's decision coming nearly 2 years after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, also criticized by many Republicans who are demanding a national abortion ban today as well. Out front now, Alabama State Representative Marilyn Lands. She's a Democrat who recently flipped a Republican-held district after taking abortion rights head-on, including by opening up and talking about the abortion that she went through more than 20 years ago. I appreciate your time, Representative Lands. So, you know, there are some, many Republicans say Trump punted. Why would he punt this to the states? He should have gone and backed a 15-week abortion ban. Others, of course, wish he would go much farther on the Republican side. But you think that what Trump said today, by punting it to the states, is even more dangerous. How come?
Well, I'm finding little solace in this today. And I know my constituents, I've talked to so many women and families, and they're fed up. And I feel like Alabama has become ground zero for attacks on women's health care and reproductive freedom. And I think my victory sent a real message, not just to our state, but to the country, that this is unacceptable.
So Trump, in his announcement today about where he's going to fall on this, at least for now, gave a 4-minute video. And among other things, he also said this, Representative.
It must be remembered that the Democrats are the radical ones on this position because they support abortion up to and even beyond the 9th month. The concept of having an abortion in the later months and even execution after birth, and that's exactly what it is, the baby is born, the baby is executed after birth, is unacceptable, and almost everyone agrees with that.
I know you're sort of recoiling even listening to that, Representative. What do you say to someone like Trump, who is talking about executing?
That doesn't happen. And what I say is that we need to return to Roe versus Wade. That, you know, that held us for 50 years. And the government just does not need to be involved in these heartbreaking decisions. It's just not a place for government. It's people's private medical decisions. And it should be between a woman, her family, and her doctor, and her God.
So what I want to ask you about this, though, that maybe goes a little bit contrary to how some see it, but I just want to open the door to this. You have some Republicans publicly criticizing Trump for not going far enough, that he should have supported a national ban. You know, Mike Pence, who's said he won't even be able to vote for Trump, is calling it a slap in the face. An anti-abortion group says they're deeply disappointed. Lindsey Graham is upset, some of his loyalists. But, you know, of course, representative voters have shown, even in red states like Kansas and Ohio, your state with your election, that they support abortion rights. So are you worried that Trump may muddy the waters on abortion? Assume that he's got the far right already going to back him, and that this position to go for states' rights may make him more palatable to other voters, that this could affect what a winning issue this is for Democrats.
I think that what I found in my election is that I had a lot of Republican support, and I feel like people are really fed up. And they're ready for change. They're ready for something different. And I feel like the Republicans are very confused on this at the moment. And I know my opponent, you know, wouldn't come out and talk about it. I think they're missing the mark here. I think they're out of touch.
All right. Well, Representative Lanz, I appreciate your time. And thank you so much for being with me tonight. And next, hear what a top RFK Jr. staffer is telling Republicans.
Whether you support Bobby or Trump, we all oppose Biden.
Tonight, get rid of Biden. Those are the exact words of RFK Jr.'s New York State Director in a meeting with New York Republicans, which was captured on video.
The only way for him, for Bobby to shake it up and to get rid of Biden is if he's on the ballot in every state, including New York. Whether you support Bobby or Trump, we all oppose Biden. And my thoughts are that, you know, that's the number one priority in the country.
A campaign spokesperson telling CNN the state director is, quote, not involved in electoral strategy. But those comments come as Biden's own coalition is far from locked in. And so tonight, Ramey Marsh has the latest in our Voters Out Front series.
This November will be the first time Lonnie White and Rokia Garbo will be old enough to vote in the presidential election. And just the second time Malik Kuhl and Mohsen Shara will cast a presidential ballot. None are planning to vote for Joe Biden or Donald Trump.
If I were to vote tomorrow, I wouldn't vote. Period.
Ideally, I would like to vote third party.
I will vote for an independent candidate.
I'm considering either voting for Claudia De La Cruz or Cornel West at this point. If there is no substantive policy change when it comes to the genocide in Gaza, then there's not really a discussion for me.
When we met at this barbecue restaurant in Atlanta, all four told me they were raised and originally registered as Democrats. But this year, the president's handling of the Israel-Gaza war has turned them away.
I think what Biden has done in aiding and abetting a genocide is just something I cannot stand for.
You're willing to withhold your vote in the presidential election unless there is a ceasefire.
Yes.
And it's implemented.
Yes.
Not voting could mean Donald Trump gets into office. Do you think he'll be better on Gaza?
Trump would probably say, flatten Gaza and make it into a golf course. I have absolutely no faith in him.
Would you not say that also the people who are not voting for one of the two people who are the likely people to really be in this race have a role to play in kind of giving the race to Donald Trump in a state like Georgia where it's going to be like razor thin?
Yeah, no, I'll do you one better, actually. I think that just means that's why the Democrats should listen.
Exactly.
Radical and more tapped in than their peers is how the group describes themselves. Rokia even helping to organize this demonstration in Atlanta last October, calling for peace and aid for the Palestinian people. While they don't speak for the majority of black voters, their dissent poses a real concern for Democrats in battleground states like Georgia, where Biden won by fewer than 12,000 votes. Black voters under age 30 made up only about 6% of voters in Georgia in 2020. That group voted for Joe Biden by more than 50 points.
We are holding their election in the palm of our hands, and they're not listening.
We're tired of just hearing him say these things, these empty promises. We have no trust in Joe Biden.
The Republican Party isn't earning their vote either.
Both sides are just equal, all in all. Nothing is being done for us.
If enough people vote third party, we can win. That's my thoughts.
President Biden's campaign has touted his success on key issues affecting young voters, including student loan forgiveness, lowering unemployment, and tackling inflation. Still, though,
I don't feel it. People may be employed, but can they survive off of it?
The federal minimum wage has stayed the same since 2009. I was five in 2009. I'm 20 years old now. Right? I work at Goodwill now for $12 an hour. and cost of living keeps increasing, especially here.
What could President Biden do to change your mind as far as how you'll vote in November?
Call for a permanent ceasefire and actually implement it. I would like us to stop giving aid to Israel.
If he doesn't get elected, that is his fault. That's not our fault. That's not the black voters here. That's not X, Y, and Z. No, it's on him.
Well, MAGA Inc., the super PAC supporting Trump, has spent more than $500,000 for ads on black radio, hoping to woo those unhappy Biden voters. And, you know, Aaron, we asked the Biden campaign about this dissent that we're seeing among some of these young black voters. And they framed it as a race between a president that actually cares about making life better for Americans, even if they haven't felt the full impact just yet, and another candidate who they say, and I'm quoting, cares only about his rich friends and himself. All that said, Aaron, they realize this dissent is there and they are working. They say it is their priority to turn it around.
Well, we shall see. Really fascinating and so important, that work. Renee, thank you. And thanks so much to all of you for being with us. Sanderson starts now.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.